This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
By the book on BFM 89.9.
Hi there. In 1978, my next guest wrote a BBC radio series called The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. It was the beginning of a phenomenon that has so far resulted in a book, TV, stage, and even computer software versions of the Hitchhiker saga. This is his latest book here in the series. It's called So Long, and Thanks for All the Fish. Please welcome Douglas Adams.
Hi, Douglas. How are you? Good to see you.
Well, you've got yourself, you got a hold of something here, haven't you? This has been unbelievably successful
for
you.
Well, it's done pretty well. This is the first book, which is a fourth book in a trilogy. It's a whole new meaning.
Fourth book in a trilogy, yeah.
I mean, science fiction, and I can't count.
Uh-huh. It was explained to me that the radio show, the TV show, the stage play, the film when it comes out, and the books, the information doesn't always
It's all completely
coincide.
Self-contradictory. Yeah, yes, absolutely. Yeah. Well, because I don't understand the sense it's meant to make, and so I try to share that sense of complete bafflement and bewilderment with the readers.
Now, is that the case, or is the truth of the matter that you get into so many different things you can't remember and all to help?
Oh,
with
yeah, that's
it. Yeah, that's why.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Buy the Book. I am Towel 1, Lee Chui Lin, along with Towel 2, Sharmila Ganesan.
Yes, bringing it along everywhere I go.
Everywhere, because of course, it's the number one thing you need when you're hitchhiking your way through the galaxy. And that is what we're talking about today, because it is the bibliography for the month of March, and we are celebrating Douglas Adams, who would actually have turned 70 on the 11th.
That actually makes me quite sad, because I think alongside the thing that he's the most famous for, which is, of course, The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy and the various iterations of that, the other thing is his early death, right? Because he died at the age of 49 in 2001. And as someone who was so definitive in a particular way, I think that ended up being something the fans will forever feel like happened too soon. And 70 doesn't sound like it's enough for us to have had enough of Douglas Adams.
Yes, particularly because he was a slow writer, which is something that we can get to shortly.
And very disrespectful of deadlines.
Yes, exactly. Loving the sound as they go whooshing by. I just wanted to start off by also saying that in preparation for this show, and our bibliography is generally an episode that requires a little bit more time and research on our parts. We just want to make sure that we get everything right. We actually missed several deadlines for this very show. So I like to think of that as a respectful tribute to Douglas Adams, who, like we referenced earlier, had a famous disregard for deadlines, or perhaps not a disregard, but a famous struggle, shall we say.
Inability to meet them.
Yes, which is something that, again, we can talk about shortly. So for those unfamiliar with Douglas Adams's work, he is really, I think, best known for The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, which is a trilogy of five books. It's also taken the story a variety of other forms. He wrote for radio in particular, which I would love to talk about. He also wrote some television in the form of Doctor Who. He also wrote a number of other novels, including Dirk Gently's Holistic Detective Agency, The Long Dark Tea Time of the Soul. But I think truly everything around his legacy has been very much shaped by Hitchhikers.
Yes, and I think if we look back at his early days, right, family-wise, you know, a fairly uneventful childhood, I must say, a child of divorce, you know, he had a pretty large family, but his real, I think, the real inklings of what he was going to turn out to be comes from his days at school, because he was very much that kid who was a little bit nerdy and a little bit of an outsider, but loved English and did really well in his writing classes, and that was something he became really known for. In fact, he talked about how he was the only student ever to be awarded a 10 out of 10 for creative writing in his school, and that's something that he would dwell on or think about whenever he faced writer's block. But also, even back at school, he became known for writing spoofs and a focus on comedy. And I think that shapes a lot of the kind of writer he later became. He started, in fact, very early on with the Monty Python troupe. So a lot of his early writing was that kind of humor. The thing I didn't know, though, was that shortly after that, he actually almost dropped out of the industry altogether, because the general thinking was that there wasn't really a place for his kind of writing in the industry, that his humor wasn't really what people were fans of at that time.
I think it's a mixture of that, but it's also that if you look at the variety of genres and forms which he wrote over the years, it may be perhaps that his style of writing was as such that it could adapt to any number of things, and that maybe television wasn't always the most natural home, that instead it could be, for instance, things that it eventually became, a radio series. It could eventually become novels. It could eventually become film, you know. So I think that there are all these different forms that his writing and his humor could take, because when we think about Douglas Adams, I will confess that I read Hitchhikers, I think, once every couple of years. You know, I just kind of make my way through it again because it helps make life make sense, insofar as life means nothing. The answer to life, the universe and everything is 42. What on earth does that mean? But when I think about doing that, each time I realize the story almost feels new to me. And I think that that is worth saying, because the story is not really the point. A lot of the story, such as it is, takes place in the initial concept, the destruction of Earth by the Vogons, you know, Arthur Dent kind of being launched up into the universe along with his friends. And that is the starting point. But the rest of the story doesn't actually have that much of a strong linear pull. The rest of the story functions in a gentle, meandering, very funny, very absurdist kind of way. And that isn't something that you can naturally really fit into. I mean, how do you sell that even as a novel?
Often gets quite unfairly referred to as Star Wars with jokes, right? And that's because of the timing that they came out in, because late 70s, the Hitchhikers radio play came out in 1978, and that was just a year or two after the first Star Wars came out. But I think that actually diminishes the genius of what Hitchhikers actually is, because like you said, every time I reread it, there are aspects of it that pop out to me in terms of the absurdism, actually dwelling a lot on ideas of philosophy and perhaps even ideas that are even more relevant today than they were before. Things like personal responsibility, our place in the larger scheme of things, our place in the universe, as it were. And I think there's a kind of skill and a mastery that he employs in being able to do these things. So essentially what he's managed to accomplish is to write really good, solid science fiction, because the science fiction is absolutely on point. He's not sort of just giving us some lightweight version of it. He also does great humor, but he also then has a component of thoughtfulness and philosophy that stands the test of time. And when they say that, you know, this kind of writing wasn't necessarily what the audiences wanted, I think it's more that people didn't know this sort of writing could be done.
I wanted to talk a bit about not just the philosophy, but also the relatability of said philosophy. So, so far we've mentioned a number of things, right? Like there are, I think, a number of images that are particularly tied to Hitchhiker's Guide. So you've got the towel, you've got the falling whale, the flower pot, you know, they're very specific sort of images. And they're very mundane images, just as Arthur himself is a very mundane character. He is perfectly ordinary, except that he's thrust into the most extraordinary of circumstances. And I think it's important that he is not a dum-dum. Like you don't, because he, of course, is our conduit, right, to understanding the world, because he knows as much as we do, which is to say nothing. Humans, at least on Earth, are not the smartest creatures out there in the galaxy. And so it's through Arthur that we get to understand, contribute, or think about the world in which we're put in. And all those other things that you're talking about, Sharmila, not just the humor, but the philosophy, the characterization, I would add the relatability, actually all comes in the form of the fact that the characters themselves are really, really indelible. I mean, I keep talking about Arthur, but it isn't just Arthur who's memorable, right? You know, you also have Zaphod. I don't know why I went with Zaphod when I thought about who's the most relatable, but
because
you also
it's have... just fun to say Beeblebrox.
It is.
Zaphod Beeblebrox.
It is. I love Ford. You know, the characters are also really enjoyable to spend time with.
Actually, that everyman quality, and this is something I found extremely interesting and also kind of delightful when I first heard about it, that everyman quality really comes from his own life. I think the fact that before he became this runaway success, both in radio and writing, particularly at that point when his career took that stall, he did a bunch of things that I never realized, because he's worked at as a barn builder and a chicken shed cleaner, a hospital porter. And he also worked as a bodyguard for a Qatari family who, were rich in oil. So it just felt like he had a real sense of that non-heroic, the importance of being able to relate to the everyman, to center a story of someone's house being leveled because of a highway for aliens. I think it needs someone who's like everyone else and not necessarily a hero.
We're talking today about Douglas Adams, his life, his work, and of course, a lot of Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, which we both love. This is because he would have been 70. He died young, unfortunately, but he would have been 70 on the 11th of March. So we're dedicating this month's bibliography episode to him. Let us know, do you enjoy the works of Douglas Adams? Do you have a favorite? You can share your thoughts with us, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, and tweet us at BFM Radio.
I know this is a story I've read reporting on over and over and over again, but tell folks who may not know what the origin of the first book was.
Well, it came about, as so many ideas do, lying drunk in a field in Innsbruck. Well, I mean, we've all been there, haven't we? We've lain in that field. You know, there were crowds of people there waiting for the inspiration. It just happened to come to me that
night. What were you doing there in Innsbruck?
Well, I was hitchhiking. Mm-hmm. I had a copy of The Hitchhiker's Guide to Europe. You'll see the sort of slight similarity of the title.
Yeah.
I had borrowed this book. Well, I still have it, actually. I maybe should give it back. Or it's a stolen book. Let's say this is a stolen book. I didn't have Europe on, as it was then, $5 a day.
Correct.
You know, because I didn't have that kind of money. I mean, this is Europe on 50 cents a day. Mm-hmm. I would go to youth hostels and ask for half a meal. I mean, this is not grand living. And it occurred to me, lying there, the only reason I was drunk was not because I'd had a huge amount to drink. I couldn't afford it. Mm-hmm. The reason I was drunk was I had a little bit to drink and nothing to eat
for
2 days.
Yeah.
And the sort of stars are sort of wiggling around my head, and it occurred to me that somebody ought to write A Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, largely because I was so bored with Innsbruck.
Mm.
Have you been there?
I've never been.
No,
there.
Don't.
Bombing frustrated minds. BFM 89.9.
This is the story of The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. Perhaps the most remarkable, certainly the most successful book ever to come out of the great publishing corporations of Ursa Minor. More popular than the Celestial Home Care Omnibus, better selling than 53 More Things to Do in Zero Gravity, and more controversial than Ulan Khaloufid's trilogy of philosophical blockbusters, Where God Went Wrong, Some More of God's Greatest Mistakes, and Who Is This God Person Anyway? And in many of the more relaxed civilizations on the outer eastern rim of the galaxy, The Hitchhiker's Guide has already supplanted the great Encyclopedia Galactica as the standard repository of all knowledge and wisdom, because although it has many omissions, contains much that is apocryphal, or at least wildly inaccurate, it scores over the older, more pedestrian work in two important ways. First, it is slightly cheaper. And second, it has the words, "Don't Panic," inscribed in large, friendly letters on the cover.
Hello, everybody. You are listening to Buy the Book with Lynn and Sharmila. And today we are talking about the life, work and legacy of Douglas Adams, best known for Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. So I wanted to talk a bit more about some elements that made their way into his storytelling, but were also very important parts of his life. And namely, the fact that he was a well-known techie. He really enjoyed technology. I think he owned, what was it, the second MacBook in the United Kingdom?
Yes, Macintosh.
Macintosh. I apologize. Yes. So he loved technology, and he also loved animals and conservation. And I think both of those elements are actually very much present in the work in terms of that fascination with how things are and also with the decentering of us people. as being the most important thing on earth.
I would extend something a little bit more controversial as well, the fact that he was a very strong atheist, right? Mm. Now, while the book is not necessarily a treatise to that, you do see elements of that decentering, exactly. The randomness of the universe, finding joy in that randomness rather than trying to search for a deeper meaning. But, you know, I love the little bits of stories you hear about his activism, the extraordinary amount of work he did in trying to save many of our endangered species, for instance, because it does pop up in the book. There's so many parts where he talks about animals as perhaps sometimes having more value than humans. And it's nice that we have just enough information about someone like Douglas Adams that some of these things make sense. And I do get the sense that as a person also, he was someone who held on to these values very strongly, because you could see that the things he did in real life reflected those things he believed in.
Well, yeah, and he was friends with Richard Dawkins. So, if we're going to talk about holding on to beliefs strongly, that's definitely one way to go. You mentioned animals being seen as perhaps more valuable, more intelligent, bringing more contributions towards the galaxy than us. The other part of it is Hitchhiker's Guide, in some ways, it's funny because it was written in installments, right? But it actually does what a lot of books don't dare to do, which is to say it allows us to meet our maker. Most books would have stepped back, you know, would have pulled away from it. But I think when you operate in this absurd, gentle universe of this particular book, where things somehow have consequence, but also no consequence, where things have meaning, but also the randomness of meaning is a central part of the books, and where it's all wrapped up in a very, very funny package, you're allowed to meet Slati Bardfast and just deal with that. That's what you get.
I like that you've used the word gentle a couple of times. And I think it is actually important, right? Because everything that happens in his book, whether it's, you know, meeting the so-called maker.
Or the destruction of Earth.
Or the destruction of Earth. Or, you know, some frankly, supposedly terrifying alien races. They're all never quite that, are they? And that's fine. They don't feel toothless. They just feel, like you said, gentle. There's something about this entire world that is very warm and friendly and welcoming. Sort of like a come sit with me and let's share a laugh and ruminate on the wonders of the universe. And then that's something that... That's why I think I like revisiting the books over and over again, because there is a very friendly quality to everything.
I wanted to talk about radio, and that's partly because, of course, we work in radio and therefore this has particular significance to us, but also because I read the books first, but subsequently I listened to the entire first run of the BBC series, the BBC radio series. And he actually wrote them for radio first. He worked with John Lloyd, who I think people are now familiar with via a number of other podcasts, QI, of course. And I wanted to talk about how he came up with the idea in the first place, because he came up with it while he was hitchhiking through Europe. And as he was lying intoxicated in a field in Austria, he said, you know, somebody should write A Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. And then he did, which I love. And I think that same sense of imagination and possibility and problems with deadlines actually infiltrated its way into the writing of the series. Because when you're writing a series, whether for radio or television, you're beholden to deadlines, right? We're talking about something that's being released on a regular basis. We're talking about something that needs other people to read it and bring it to life. And he frequently made things up as he went along. And we've talked quite a bit about other authors and the process, how some people draft it all out. Some people know exactly what they want to do, and others just unearth or make up the story as they go, which I think is the purest childhood dream for those of us who love story. And I love that Hitchhikers came to be in that way.
You know, one of my big regrets, and I don't have any excuse for it, I've actually never listened to the radio adaptation. And perhaps this is the time that, you know, now that we're doing the show, it's reminded me that it's something that I've always wanted to do. It's absolutely something that I want to catch up on. I wanted to bring up the book that doesn't get talked about as much, which is Dirk Gently, because he wrote that post. Hitchhikers. It's actually so good. It's a detective novel. It has that same absurdist humor quality. It's about time travel and multiple realities, and it actually has its roots in a Doctor Who script that he initially worked, and then he changed it into a novel, and then it has a sequel, which is The Long Dark Tea Time of the Soul. And I bring that up because subsequently, of course, he hasn't really written very much. There have been compilations of his writings. There have been works that were then completed by others, including Owen Colfer. But I often wonder what later day Douglas Adams might have done. Because to be fair, there was quite a long gap between when he sort of stopped writing and his death. But I don't know. I think today's landscape would actually offer quite a bit for someone like him to write. And on that note, I wanted to point out that there is Towel Day, May 25th, which is held yearly to celebrate the legacy of Douglas Adams.
Yes, in which basically you take the item that you most need to have while hitchhiking through the galaxy, a towel, and wear it around just to signal your affection for the man. You know that point you were making about how there was a relatively long period, right, between when he was actively writing and then when he passed on. And he actually passed away in Beverly Hills. So he was in the United States at the time. And it was part of the push towards the film version of Hitchhiker's Guide, which we can talk about later in footnotes. But I think perhaps, I don't know, he wrote for television. I would have been so curious to see what he might potentially have come up with for film. We are in the age of the multiverse. We can't seem to stop multiversing all over the place. And I just think, you know, in a time where pop science has become so incredibly accessible, someone like Douglas Adams, who in many ways helped to make this happen. Like you said, I would imagine a huge playground. The other thing is, and just this is for me in closing, is the fact that I mentioned radio earlier, but I failed to mention the thing that I found most remarkable about that, which is that it's written to be spoken, which means that aside from the narrator, it's also written, the dialogue has to be written in such a way that it makes sense as a radio drama, even as you've got pew, 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 and you know, you're flying through the planets and you're going somewhere else. And when you listen to it today, I mean, yeah, it sounds like somebody's making it up week on week, but it also is delightful and cohesive. And I think part of the reason why you said earlier, Sharmila, that his writing is enjoyable and even as the science holds up, which is not true for everybody, is exactly that he was accustomed to writing for the spoken word. And that therefore, even when they were adapted or, you know, pushed into novel form, they still kept that very intense readability and ease about them.
Yes, I didn't think about it that way, but you're right. The readability actually comes from a listenability as well. When you think of something like the Vogan poetry generator, which became such a thing online, right? You can and the kind of the joy of reading out these ridiculous bits of the worst poetry in the universe, which is used to torture people. It's all of it is so readable. It's something that you can sort of say out loud and gain a lot of humor in it. And every character also then speaks in very distinctive ways. And you're absolutely right. That goes back to how you would write for radio.
So we've been talking today about Douglas Adams, best known perhaps for being the author of The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, a trilogy of 5 books. We'd like to hear from you. Did you love Douglas Adams's work? Do you have a favorite you'd like to share? WhatsApp us 018-789-8899 and tweet us at BFM Radio.
Celebrated best-selling novel, The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
What is this thing?
It's the guide. It's got everything you need to know to survive in the universe.
Losing your planet isn't the end of the world.
Hey, man! What the hell are you doing here?
Arthur, this is Aphod Beeblebrox, president of the galaxy.
He shares 3 of the same mothers as me.
It's the beginning of an adventure unlike anything on Earth.
I've been stranded on a strange planet for a number of years. I have been avoiding you.
You look great. You're doing well. You've grown.
Trisha!
The fate of the universe is in their hands.
Sorry, what exactly are we doing?
The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. Don't leave Earth without it.
And that brings us to footnotes, where, of course, we're talking about the adaptations of Douglas Adams's work. We referenced the fact earlier that he wrote in a number of forms, right? So he wrote for radio, novels, there was television, and the movie Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy was actually released pretty shortly after his death.
Yes, just 4 years after, actually. And of course, there was an earlier BBC television series adaptation in the 80s, which I've never watched, unfortunately. I was so excited about the movie. I have to say that it's one of those things that perhaps there was no real reaching the crazy expectations that people had of this film. The thing I love about it is that it's perfectly cast. Whether it's Martin Freeman as Arthur Dent or Mos Def as Ford Prefect or Sam Rockwell as Zaphod Beeblebrox, like the cast is just perfect. I think the film, however, doesn't quite capture the scope of the books. It captures the tone, but not the scope.
So this is the part where I take my earlier point about gentle and stab it in the heart, because I actually think that that is a huge problem for a feature film, and that why a TV series might be able to get away with a meandering plot is because you have many episodes and you can also set a certain expectation for what this is. However, a movie is expected to have its three acts. It's expected to have, you know, the opening riposte, and then it widens up, and then it reaches a peak, and then it gets to a satisfying finale. This film does not do that. And I think that it's not its fault. In some senses, it could never do that. That is simply not the story that is available for it to tell. And because of that, I also don't know what kind of future adaptations we're going to see, because there isn't a whole lot else to say about that movie. I will watch it whenever it's on, out of an intense love for the source material, and also because, like you said, perfectly cast. If there's one person who's really cornered the market on the befuddled, frazzled Englishman, it is Martin Freeman. Like, he just does it so well, whether he's Hobbit, detective assistant, or, you know, or
man who lost his home and is suddenly on an intergalactic adventure.
He is essentially, they're distinct characters, but he's really cornered the market on playing those characters to chef's kiss. It's perfection. And so, yeah, I think it's perfectly cast, but there's also not a whole lot else to say. I also don't think it has aged tremendously well. You plan to listen to the radio series, right? And when you listen to it, it still actually feels really fresh and well put together. The movie, on the other hand, is very much a 2005 film. It's not bad, but it's definitely from that era.
I agree with you that I think it would have made a much better TV show. And we now live in the age of prestige TV shows. I'm not sure whether I necessarily want it to be prestige, though. You know, I don't want someone taking this too seriously. And I say this because the actual Douglas Adams adaptation that I love is the Dirk Gently TV show that is on Netflix. It's so perfect, right? And you could say that it was easier to adapt something like a Dirk Gently because the books are not as dense. They don't have such a huge legacy. So what the series actually does is kind of take the rough bones of it and make something kind of new. But what they do manage to do is not take the whole thing too seriously. So it's kind of this weird, odd, funny creation that, look, didn't really do that well, but is great watching if you enjoy that kind of thing. I want to see Hitchhikers adapted that way, with a kind of bravado and a kind of sense of humor, but also adventure and that gentle touch, which I think can happen. But I fear that sometimes maybe the baggage and the legacy might make it very difficult to do.
You know who should do it? I think Taika Waititi should do it.
I love it. I love that idea. 100%.
Because that's, I think, the person, if not him, I still think that that is the general tone that we're approaching it at, right?
The closest that I can think of, for sure. Mm,
where you want somebody who has a certain measure of irreverence, but who also has a very high measure of quality and talent and aesthetics, which means that you're going to get a show that looks really good, which I think is important for something called The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. But you also want that. And you know, Taika Waititi does really well in capturing families that form out of necessity or people who are adrift and find one another. His movies do tend to have that theme. And I just feel like he would do a really killer job. It's a bit of a cliche. I think it's a bit of the obvious play here. But if I were just kind of manufacturing the situation, that is what I would manufacture.
Oh, I 100% vote yes. I hope he or Netflix or some other streaming channel is listening and get that going, because we need more adaptations of Douglas Adams.
I think we do. And I think that it's also a little bit tough because it's worth saying that we're talking as if the only adaptation the only adaptations that have happened have been on the usual forms of media. So television, movies, radio it originated from. But actually, there's also been a computer game. There's been a variety of different things that have been offshoots of the galaxy of The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. So there are a few ways to play this. And I will also say that the existential questions that it draws on, in some ways, even the technology that it references, it doesn't feel dated, which again is a mark of good sci-fi.
I also think that what would be fun or interesting is to actually see other stories perhaps set in this kind of absurdist sci-fi future, which, well, not even actually the future, is it? It's kind of our time. We just didn't know. I suppose so, not so much adaptations of Adams's work, but I very much enjoyed, for instance, Owen Cole for completing the book, right? And I wonder what it would be like to see even more short stories or books or, you know, things that are inspired by the Adams style of writing. I say this with reservation because they've not always worked. But I think his universe has a sort of openness to it that you could play around with quite nicely.
I get scared sometimes. I think of Mario Puzo. I think of, you know, writers where it's writer in name only. I'm thinking of Francine Pascal. And so, yeah, with someone like Douglas Adams, who's still really, really beloved, I worry, but I also hope that you would then see people kind of approaching it with all due respect. Neil Gaiman, for example, has written a book about Douglas Adams. So, and someone like him would do well to capture that spirit and that sense of writing that he had. But yeah, I get very cautious around these things. So today we have been talking about the life, work and legacy of Douglas Adams. And in this bit, we've been talking about the adaptations. Sadly, not that many, because like we said, he passed on just before or while the movie was, you know, on its way to being produced. But we'd like to hear from you. Do you like Douglas Adams? Do you like his work? And did you actually enjoy the film? You can let us know. WhatsApp 018-789-8899. Tweet us at BFM Radio. Write to us at buythebook@bfm.my. We have to say it, right? I think we very
sure
much
we
have to say it. So this is us signing off. So long, and thanks for all the fish. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.